Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. This conference is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to introduce Sribar Goni.
Hi, welcome everybody to the Accelerator Value Program, a WebSphere Expert Call Series. As some of you may already know that this call series is available exclusively for AVP customers. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server version 7.0 migration best practices. We have four speakers today. I will introduce them in the order they are going to present. Our first speaker is Chris Dacom. He is an Accelerator Value Leader and Specialist at IBM. He joined IBM in 1999. He previously worked in lab services, also known as ISSW, in the service provider practice for more than 5 years in the areas of development, deployment, and testing of many telecommunication solutions based on WebSphere product family. Our next speaker is Jonathan Ritchie. He's an Accelerator Value Leader and Specialist at IBM. He joined IBM in 1999. He previously worked in WebSphere on ZOS development on versions 3.5 through version 6.0 until 2004. Then he worked in lab services as well for WebSphere on ZOS until 2009. In 2009, Jonathan joined Accelerator Value team. He facilitated our first AVP expert call series on WebSphere application server administration using Jython. Our next speaker is Lee Perlow. He is a senior software engineer and Accelerator Value Leader for WebSphere brand. Lee started working for IBM in 1985 at the Federal System Division. He has developed solutions for United States intelligence community as well as software configuration management products. He has also delivered consulting services, led support teams, and architected knowledge engineering solutions for IBM support. And last but not least is Kim Cook Bard. She is an Accelerator Value Specialist for WebSphere Application Server, WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, and Virtual WebSphere Extreme Scale product. She joined IBM in 1989. She previously worked in IBM WebSphere Application Server support for 10 years. She supported WAS version 3.0, 3.5, version 4.0, 5.0, 5.1, and version 6.0. She also participated in support tool testing and led support teams. Later, Kim joined Accelerator Value team in 2007. Now, a little bit about the presentation format. You may download the presentation, I provided in the beginning slide. Let me bring that up one more time. So this is the presentation we will be using for today, and also we will be recording the presentation, which for whose links will be provided in a separate email. During the presentation, you can also ask questions through chat. We will take the questions as they come during some transition periods. We'll also have a question and answer session at the end, at which time everybody will be open to ask any questions. With that, I'll turn the presentation over to Chris. Chris, over to you.
Thank you, Sridhar. Good afternoon, everybody. The Accelerated Value team works with a lot of different customers, and in that role, we've been involved in many migration projects, and what we wanted to do today is take some time and take this opportunity to share some of our experiences with you. There are an awful lot of documents out there that say how to do a migration. But the main reason for today's session is not to go over that, but to share our knowledge of how to make your migration more successful. Over and again, we see that the key to a successful migration is planning. And conversely, one of the key reasons for failure is poor planning. For this discussion, we're going to concentrate on WAS version 7, but the information could be equally applied to migration to any version. This is the first of two planned sessions. For this part one, we'll not be getting into the technical details. This talk fills a gap by focusing on planning. Topics include lessons learned, known issues, and two case studies that reinforce the key points that we want to bring to the table. The second session, which will be held in the new year, will drill down deeper and look at the migration process in a lot more detail. You can move to the next slide for me. Our agenda for today's call is going to cover the important topics that you need to address when preparing to migrate. Firstly, you need to identify your goals. And then you need to carry out the necessary planning. This includes a number of topics, and this things such as identifying important duties, creating an assessment, looking into best practices, looking at cell layout, and looking at improvements you want to make to your environment. We will also cover some case studies, as I mentioned just now, and we're going to discuss the migration map, which looks at topics such as migration level of effort, migration dependencies, mixed version support, port and port usage. And finally, we'll quickly provide you with some additional resources and do provide an overall summary. Moving on to slide number 3, you need to start by identifying your goals. We need to answer the question, why do you need to migrate? This can be as simple as just wanting to maintain currency on your applications, or it could be as complex as re-implementing your entire WebSphere environment. The first step is to understand the important factors that are leading to the need to migrate and to identify your goals. Next, you need to identify the timescales in which the migration must be completed and the available budget and any budgetary constraints that you may have. You then need to identify any changes to your environment that are needed and any other changes that you would like to make. Some of the most common reasons to migrate may be to move to a current release, perhaps because the version currently in use is approaching end of life. You may want to leverage new features available in the newer version, or the available tooling may have improved, providing additional functionality that you'd like to use, or perhaps the new version will deliver improved performance. You could also be working to adapt to a change in your environment or user base, perhaps an increase or even a decrease in the number of users to be supported. You could have new applications being deployed in your environment with a new set of requirements. You could also be moving to new hardware, perhaps a faster processor, going to a different operating system, or maybe even moving to 64-bit architecture. So basically, identifying your goals early will create the foundation for a successful migration. Moving on to slide number 4. As already stated, we want to share our knowledge of how to make a migration successful. To that end, the key is planning. And one of the key reasons for failure is poor planning. This slide provides a list of the elements that need to be addressed during the planning phase. Each topic is going to be discussed in some detail on the following slides, but quickly going through the list of topics, first and foremost, a migration is a project and should be treated as such. You must identify all of the important details, and we would recommend creating an assessment questionnaire to identify application requirements. Always implement the identified best practices and address any identified skill gaps in your project team. You then need to review any benchmark performance data, if it's available, and one of the other more important elements is to use an incremental approach to the migration. Don't try and do everything in one go. Then identify and review the relevant documentation from IBM and work with your AVP team to try and identify known issues and avoid any known issues out there. Okay, moving on to slide number 5. As I said earlier, a migration should be treated as a project, not as a task. Approaching a migration in this way will help ensure a successful migration. We've seen this with many customers that have been successful in their migrations. Firstly, assign a migration team or at least a migration leader. All of your tasks should go through and be reviewed by this team. The migration team should include all parties that are going to be affected by the migration. For example, under the WebSphere brand, you may have WAS, MQ, DB2,
And you need to create sub-teams focusing on the different products. And obviously, as we're talking about WebSphere application server here, you need to create a sub-team focusing on WAS. Create a project plan. This has got to include all of the requirements, tasks, and the timelines. It should also clearly document the goals that have been identified. The teams that you set up should organize regular meetings and make sure to include all of the different areas that need to be involved in the migration, whether this is management, development teams, operations, support, or testing. Work with your IBM AVP team and IBM WebSphere representatives on your migration planning. We can provide a great deal of input, including the ones listed on the slide here. We can provide information on software, such as known issues. We can provide information about version availability and interoperability. And we can provide suggestions based on real-life experiences. We can provide information about best practices and training and education that may be available to you. Okay, moving on to slide number 6. The next step is to identify the important details. Firstly, you need to assess your configuration and each application. What are the hardware requirements? Has your user base changed? Do you have more users or maybe less users? What is the topology? Are things changing? For example, does the environment encompass multiple sites? What is the application architecture? We'll look at this more with the assessment questionnaire, which I'll talk about on the next slide. What is the environment's availability? What are your high availability requirements? Has the allowable downtime changed? Do you have multiple environments, perhaps for development, test, and production? Is this a shared environment which is used by other teams? What are the best testing practices? Is there a long test cycle before anything can go into production? There are a lot of questions that need to be answered. But finally, you need to identify any gaps between the current and planned environments and then identify your goals. Moving on to slide number 7. The next step is to create the assessment questionnaire, which we'll use to capture information about all of the applications. Need to understand your applications. Your operations team may not have details about all of the applications and everything about them. Only the development teams really know all of the details. Create the assessment questionnaire as a template to find out about the applications that are going to be migrated. There's a new feature in WAS version 7 Deployment Wizard which allows you to select Show All. And this will prompt you for all information that you will need in a deploy and is a great starting point for the assessment questionnaire. The results of these assessments need to be rolled into your plan to allow the applications to migrate, accounting for any application requirements. So when creating this assessment, you should try and identify any challenges and known issues in your current environment so that you can plan to resolve them if possible. You should also leverage new and existing features in your new environment in addition to addressing any past issues such as stability, use of best practices, and processes. And this should include any inefficiencies that you found in your existing platform. This is also a good time to begin or increase your use of automation. Such as WSAdmin and Jython scripting. Now for the discussion of best practices and moving on to the next slide, I'll hand you over to Jonathan.
Thank you, Chris. In continuing with the planning portion of the presentation, we're going to start with just some migrations options when you're actually looking to migrate the environment. There are three best practice options. We'll review all three of these, build from scratch, mix, sell, and migrate in place. We're not going to go into a whole lot of technical detail, but I want to give you an overview and an understanding of these three. Build from scratch, this is basically you're building a brand new environment, and you will end up having two environments simultaneously. There's a couple of advantages and disadvantages to this, such as you get to maintain your old environment as your new environment is built up. You do have a fallback scenario. And you also may need to engage an architect if you're planning to change your environment or your topology depending on your needs. Next option is mixed cell. This is where you're taking your version 6 environment and you're bringing over a node at a time into your version 7 cell. You're basically recreating those nodes in version 7, and your profile all comes over, all your configuration settings come over at that time. You still have two environments that you're maintaining. Sometimes your refactoring for your topology is not as easy, but if that's not what you need, this may be a good option for you. The last one, referred to as a gunshot approach, is a migrating place. This is where you take your version 6 environment and you all at once convert it over to a version 7 cell. This is common, but not necessarily the wrong one, depending on what your needs are. We'll go into some of the details on how these look in the next few slides. The one thing I do want to bring up is the benefits of using best practices. These three are documented. They're all within best practices. Some are a little easier than others. Which one you use is very much going to depend upon, you know, the risk you're allowed, you're comfortable with, your needs, and all the other factors that Chris has talked about leading up to this. Let's go on to page 9. All right, this is a shot of basically the migrate from scratch. As I said before, you're basically building out a brand new environment, maintaining your old environment, bringing over applications as you can, making sure they're ready and compatible with the new environment, and this way you can migrate over application at a time as you do the process, and you always have a fallback with your version 6 cell. This also takes the most amount of work because it is a build up a brand new environment from scratch. Some of the disadvantages here is that there's no tooling involved with this migration. The more you have use of automated tooling that maybe you've created in-house or you've acquired over the years, this might make this process easier. It also depends on the size of the environment. Let's move on to slide 10. Okay, this is a mixed cell environment. What you can see here is that you take one of your version 6 nodes and you bring it up in your version 7 cell. This is nice in that all your settings and everything come over. And if you don't have a lot of knowledge or information about your current application settings, when you're doing the migration, this may be an option. There are some things that you need to know. The ability to change the topology after you've brought this in is more difficult. There are some features and options in version 7 that you won't get right off the bat when you move these, when you recreate these nodes in your version 7 cell. These will be available later if you want to go back and set them, but they're not available right off the bat. Again, you're still maintaining two environments, so you do have a fallback scenario. Let's go on to slide 11. Okay, this is what I referred to before as a gunshot approach, a migrate in place. You're taking your version 7.6 cell, and you're running through a set of migration tools, and you're coming up with a new version 7 cell with your version 6 profile. The advantages, this is fast. The disadvantages are, if everything is not version 7 compliant, you will notice it as soon as you try to bring up your environment. You don't have a second a fallback environment because this is all happening at the same place. Yes, there's still ways to recover in that you may have a backup of your version 6 cell that you can recover from, but you may have some time incurred there if you have to follow that route. There are practices and information regarding all three of these. So, which one you decide is going to depend on your needs. Let's go to slide 12. Okay, here I kind of cover the pros and cons of each of these. I kind of talked about them along the way. Built from scratch, there's no dependency on tooling. If you are using a lot of scripts in your environment, it's a larger environment, this migration may make it easier. You run the least risk of compatibility issues because you're building from scratch. You migrate your applications one at a time, and you can see if they're working, if they're not, and attend to them without losing the production environment in version 6 as you do the process. Some of the cons, your tuning of your old environment is not brought over. So unless you have a really good handle on that, there may be some background work you need to do to really understand what you tuned and what you've set in your old environment so that you can replicate it. It is a manual process. There is no tooling, as I said before. So if you had good use of scripting and automation to manage your environment, it will make it easier. If you don't, it will make it a little more difficult. Mixed cell environment, again, your version 6 profile is carried over. There's no set of, you know, there's no management scripts, no comprehensive set of scripts really exist to do this. You don't need them to run this. Your version 6 profile is accessible in version 7. We'll go over what versions can be accessed from V7 cells later on in the presentation. Some of the cons of this, it does depend on migration tooling. Depending on what options and custom settings you may have for your environment, you may run into a hiccup here or there trying to migrate these options over. You can work through, but, you know, that may be something you may run into. Again, when you migrate a version 6 cell, you don't get all the features of version 7 right off the bat. You may have to go back later and enable some of these if you need them. If you're migrating because you need to rebuild your, expand your topology, change it, bringing over a version 6 profile may make this very difficult. It's refactoring after the fact is some, it can definitely be a lot more of a challenge than when you're building from scratch. Another thing to keep in mind as you change versions is if you left things default in version 6, if you bring them over to version 7, the defaults may have changed. So you may end up picking some of the version 7 defaults, and we try not to change the defaults, but at times they do change, and you may be caught off guard if you're not aware of what it is, what the defaults are. The migrate in place, again, all your configuration information is carried forward, and you don't need a comprehensive set of scripting to do this. It does rely on migration tools. The same issues with migration tooling apply here that apply to Mixcell. This does require that your applications all be ready to migrate at once. And if not, you may incur unexpected downtime. There is a limited value to refactoring, the same reasons as in Mixcell. Again, some features in version 7 are not available right off the bat, and you do have to be aware of your defaults. Let's go on to slide 13. Okay. Prove your automation when you're managing a configuration. While you're going through this migration process, think about where your automation is. How can you, are you efficiently using your environment? Could you manage it more efficiently? Some of the processes here may be scripting has been noted a number of times. It's a good way of cutting down the work needed to do through the administrative console. Can help your time. It can help maintain consistency throughout your environments. Gython scripting is currently the preferred method for scripting, but one thing I do want to mention here, it'll come up again later, is you know, you've probably heard that Jackal has been deprecated for the past few years. This is no longer the case. Jackal has been, will be supported and continue to be supported as far as we can see into the future at this point. So you don't need to rush to convert your Jackal scripts. Make sure you test your scripts. If you're using your version 6 scripts that you use to manage your environment and you want to use them in version 7, run some tests. The configuration repository, some of the configuration objects may move around from version to version, so when you're manipulating these through your scripts, test them. Make sure that they all work, and they may require some tweaking to work with the version 7 environment. Simplify configuration management using property files. Okay, for version 7, there's a new tool. This is a tool that is used to export, update, import, and maintain consistency of key configuration elements using property files. I'm not going to go into detail on how it works, but it is another process outside of Jython or Jackal scripting. So it may be something you want to take a look at to help you maintain and upgrade your environment. It does contain fewer steps to write to manage some of the key configuration elements, but it's not going to. From my understanding, it doesn't work with all the configuration elements. So, depending on what your needs are, it may be worthwhile to look at. Let's go on to slide 14. Okay, change your use of high availability features. As you're migrating, you know, have your availability requirements changed? Chris discussed this earlier. You know, are you refactoring your topology to increase your availability or your recoverability? Is your tolerated downtime less? Are you going to start enabling clustering? Are you going to increase the amount of clustering that you're using? These are things you want to assess, take a look at, and maybe take advantage of. Management of your core groups. In the past, a core group required that a node agent and deployment manager were within a single core group. This requirement has been removed from version 7, so you have no longer a requirement to have a node agent and deployment manager in a core group. As in version 6, all the if you have a cluster, all those cluster members must be the within the same core group. Core group size limits. In the past, there was a theoretical limit of about 50 for version 6. The reason for that was all the cross-communication. Cross-communication is still there in version 6.1 and version 7. The communication has improved. So the theoretical maximum is about 100 now. But it's still best practice to keep them as small as you can. You know, you can expand it, you can go large, but the cross-communication is going to create high utilization if you start really increasing the size of your core groups up to close to 100. So keep that in mind if you're going to start managing and working with core groups. Let's go on to slide 15. Here's just some of the relevant documents talking about some of the things we've gone over. Haven't gone over a lot of this in detail. Just give you an idea of things to think about as you're planning your migration. You know, which migration option am I going to choose? Am I refactoring my topology and so forth? There's some documentation here. More documentation can be gathered working with your ABP representative or your WebSphere representative. Let's go on to slide 16. Okay, we're just going to walk through some of the known issues. This is not a complete list, but just some of the things to point out. When you're moving to version 7 and in version 6, 64-bit was available. The performance of 64-bit for version 7 has improved compared to version 6. Are you going to utilize version 64-bit in version 7 though when you migrate? Think about it. What are you going to do? You still have to right size your heap. Just because it's available and usable may not mean it's the best option out there. Right sizing the heap is still a key factor. Some of the things that can help you with right sizing a heap is the Java Health Center and the IBM Support Assistant. There's a couple links here for that information. Changing to the packaging of JDBC drivers. In the past, before version 7, most of the JDBC drivers were packaged with WebSphere. This is no longer the case with version 7, and we've supplied a link here to so that you can look up what JDBC drivers are available. They're all available, it just may not come with WebSphere, so you may have to do looking to see which one you need and where you're going to get it from. More ports used. So from version 6 to version 7, you have 6.0, 6.1 and version 7. Version 6.1 and version 7 use the same amount of ports in the application server compared to 6.0, they use a few more. In the deployment manager and the node agent, they use a few less. Concept here is to keep an eye on your ports. They do change the amount of ports that they use. Make sure that you count for this as you're walking through. A little later in the presentation, we'll go into a little more detail on this. Let's go on to slide 17. Okay, security default changes. Up until version 7, LTPA version 1 was enabled. In version 7, it is now disabled. The only time you may need to use LTPA version 1 is if you're communicating with a version 5 or earlier environment. Since this is usually not the case, they disabled it by default. It can be enabled if you are and if you need to. WebCLTAI, this interceptor has been deprecated, still usable, but you may want to start looking into possible changes to help deal with this in the future. Cipher strengths have changed for SSL communication. Migrating with feature packs. Now, in version 6, I know this was a sore point. When people were installing feature packs in version 6, such as web services, one of the difficulties was that if you had an environment that was set up and running and then you installed a feature pack, all your specific configuration information was changed and everything was reset back to default. This is no longer the case. Version 7 has worked around that. Some of the feature packs, such as web services, are now also included in the version 7 product. So just something to pay attention when you're migrating. If you use feature packs, start asking the questions. Start thinking about that ahead of time and put it into your plan. WSAdmin changes. As I mentioned before, Jackal is no longer deprecated. So this, if you were thinking about this in the past, that you have to migrate off of Jackal, this is not the case. I think one of the reasons was that a lot of customers had significant investments in their Jackal scripts, and to change them would have incurred a pretty heavy toll. So that's not the only reason, but I think that's one of the reasons. There's no rush to convert off Jackal. As I mentioned before, some of the configuration objects within the scripting have changed, so make sure you test your scripts on version 7 before you actually start using them in production. Let's go on to slide 18. Okay. There have been a couple behavior changes in WebSphereMQ version 6 and version 7. There is some new JMS data conversion behavior. I'm not an MQ person, but be aware that there may be some things here you want to be aware of. Talk to your ADP rep. They can work with you on this and get you the information. I think there was one specifically on data conversion, and there is an A part here that is mentioned. I don't have a lot more detail than that, but I just want to make you aware these are things to think about. Also, some behavior changes in DB2, version 9.5 and version 9.7. The locking timeout for DB2 has now been turned off by default. We have a link here for more information. So basically what we're doing is finishing up the planning here, but, you know, you really need to start considering all these things, and it just shows you there's a wide scope of here to, things to consider before you actually start your migration. Spend some time, work with your ADP reps and WebSphere reps to help you collect and manage some of this stuff. Let's go on to slide 19. Okay, I'm going to now turn this over to Lee to continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Jonathan. So to try to put this all in perspective, we're going to give you two case studies. One is a large healthcare provider. They had a very easy migration. It was not a small migration, but it did go well. Let me give you some background. So they migrated multiple products simultaneously, including WebSphere Application Server, WebSphere MQ, and DB2. They skipped versions when they went from WebSphere version 6 to WebSphere version 7. Yes, they also went from MQ version 6 to version 7. They installed new hardware. They made only minor modifications to their application. They engaged IBM Services, and because IBM Services is large and has lots of offerings, they specifically engaged them for architecture and planning. They did not participate in the actual migration. AVP was not engaged until the solution was in production. Moving on down to the issues they experienced, this is where I get to give you a little bit more detail on the DB2 and MQ issues. So in DB2, behavior for locking timeout changed. Let me continue. So in DB2, when you installed 9.5, it turned off the lock timeout. As a result, it was possible to experience page lock that you and conflict that you wouldn't have experienced before. So it was identified in production. They resolved it with a configuration change. Basically, they had deadlocks. They found out the reason was the timeout was disabled. Moving on down to MQ. So in MQ version 7, there were changes in the JMS behavior and a variety of other behaviors. In the case of this client, what they saw was errors at the client screen. They did not see errors in their logs. Once they were able to do debug on this and understand the behavior, they realized it was simply a change in behavior between MQ6 and MQ7. And again, they were able to resolve it through a configuration change. Also, during testing, not in production, but during testing, they were able to identify a variety of AIX issues that were addressed by installing required fix packs and a few interim fixes. Can we go on to the next page, please? So let me give you perspective on how what went well and what didn't. So best practices. They built from scratch rather than using the migration tooling. They built a test environment that very closely mirrored production. They tested early and they tested often. So while migrating from scratch is more effort up front, just like planning is, it reduces the risk of rework. So they were very successful in mirroring their test environment to what their production environment would be. They were able to work out a lot of problems before they went into production. They were able to leverage IBM services during planning and the architecture. When possible, they limited the scope of their changes. In their particular instance, this client was able to avoid doing major application changes. They just focused on changing the IBM software versions. As they made those changes, they were able to test incrementally as they went along. Also, they were able to leverage automation. They wrote scripts that they were able to test in their test environment, and because their test environment mirrored production, it was very easy for them to reuse those scripts when they deployed into production. Now, not everything went perfectly, so here are some lessons learned. Research co-requisites and prerequisites for IBM software carefully. As I pointed out, they had to go back and add a significant number of AIX fixes. Test needs to be done incrementally and repeatedly as you make changes, including performance testing. There was the possibility that the database deadlocks and the user errors that were seen as because of the MQ configuration changes could have been caught if more performance testing using real-world characteristics had been done. But all in all, this was a very successful migration, and the customer was happy. Let's move on. Here's a second case study. This is a large retail client. They did not have an easy migration. In this particular case, it was a very complex IBM software stack. Webster Application Server was in the middle. Again, they skipped from version 6 directly to version 7. They did install new hardware. They made significant application updates to their applications. They did use IBM services for some of the work. AVP was engaged prior to the deploy, but it was after the initial planning, the issues that they experienced. So there was complexity of changes caused by a compressed test, or that caused a compressed test schedule. Because they didn't do as much planning up front as would have been ideal for the very, very complex scenario that they had put together, they did run into trouble. And as a result, and I'm sure you've all seen this, test got truncated. There was very limited and very late user acceptance and performance testing. So they did not anticipate and plan for changes in the characteristics of the application that might cause user frustration. The test environment was significantly smaller than production. It was not representative. As a result, even if they'd done extensive performance testing, there is a risk that they would not have been able to identify problems before they went into production. There was no planning for changes to IBM software. And as a result of that, again, compressed schedule. For example, they didn't take the time to look for deprecated APIs for changes in behavior in Webster Application Server, MQ, DB2. They didn't invest in researching new features to determine what could make their application run better or provide more capability prior to deploying. There was also no agreement between the IBM team and the client's management team on how to handle issues. In other words, it wasn't an integrated project. It was multiple separate projects. As a result, when IBM was able to identify and raise issues, they weren't rolled into the plan very efficiently, and it made it very difficult for the client to mitigate risk. If we move on to the next page. So you'll see there's a contrast between page 22 and page 20 in that the list of best practices used is short and the list of lessons learned is long. So what they did well was they built a new environment from scratch. Again, that's more work up front, but it's less risk of rework. Lessons learned. You have to build a test environment that mirrors your production. You need to be able to do a real-world or near-real-world test. Deploy changes incrementally. Test early and often. Separate the application changes from the IBM version changes. As we all know, if you change multiple things at once, it's difficult to figure out which one caused the problem. So, Big Bang, from this perspective, definitely caused delays in their schedule. Research changes to IBM software and add time to your action plan or to your project plan. So, leverage new features, improve the overall solution. Plan for removing deprecated functions. These are things that need to be added to the project plan. When leveraging IBM services, agree on a project plan up front. Agree on a process. Try to take advantage of IBM's experience and roll that into the project plan as early and as efficiently as possible. Okay. At this point, let's go to the next page, and I'll turn it over to Kim.
Thank you, Lee. As you see, we spent some time discussing project planning, talked about best practices and known issues, and shared a few case studies. Next, we're going to look at the migration map. Now, if you attended previous migration webcasts, the next few slides may look very familiar to you. So today, I will briefly talk about the migration levels effort from an administrator and developer view, migration dependencies, mixed version support, and the port usage. Next slide, please. When looking at the combination of versions that involve in migration, there are two areas of importance, which are the administration and development. This slide shows you the migration map. Notice that there are two charts, Administration Impact, and Development Impact. The column shows you the version where you're going to, and the row shows you the version where you're coming from. The column and rows give you a high-level perspective of the effort involved in these various migration scenarios. Anything prior to version 5 is very difficult. And if you notice anything after version 5, you will definitely notice some stability. Runtime migration tools are supported for migrating from version 5.1 and higher. Let's take a closer look at the chart from an administrative perspective. You would notice from version 5.1 and higher, it shows impact is easier and offer a high degree of compatibility for applications. You may think back or remember when the administrating model was re-engineered to use a flat file system instead of the database repository. I believe this was introduced back in version 5.0. As far as scripting is concerned, it hasn't changed much after version 5.1, although we focus more on JSON, which is the preferred direction. As Johnson stated early in slide 13, IBM will still support and use Jekyll because there's a fair number of clients that are using Jekyll today. Now let's take a look at the developer impact chart. In this chart, you will also notice from version 5.1 and higher, it shows the impact is easier as well. WSAD changed to RAD in version 6.0 and later. For version 6.0 and 6.1, support for J2EE is 1.4. And then, of course, JEE5 was introduced in version 7. Slide 25, please. Migration dependency. This chart summarizes some of the key aspects of the various different Westway application versions. If you notice in version 6.0 and 6.1, I mentioned the support levels of J2EE in the previous slide is 1.4. Before in version 7, RAD 7.5 is supported. J2EE is now JEE. It has been upgraded to 5, and Java 6 is supported. We also have BLA, which is our business level application. It's a new concept in version 7. Please keep in mind, standard AIR files are still supported, and we also support other runtimes such as DB2 version 9. Next slide, please. Mixed version support. This slide shows you what is supported when adding a new node, new server, and new cluster member. The one thing I will point out in this slide is version 5.1 node cannot be directly added nor removed to and from a version 7.1 cell. Next slide, please. Port usage. Version 6.1 and version 7 uses more ports than some of our previous versions of WebSphere. And this is due to new features requirements and changes within the existing features. Keep in mind, the increase in the number of ports being reserved can have an impact in your environment. Your firewall may need to be updated to reflect these additional ports, and you may experience some more port conflicts. I recommend you take some time to review the URL included in this presentation on this slide. It will give you a rundown on the reserved ports of the different versions of WebSphere. Slide number 28. So, you see we discussed the migration level and its impact from both the developer and the administrating view. We looked at the migration dependencies and JEE5 and Java 6 is supported in the WebSphere version 7. I briefly went over the mixed version support when adding and removing a node from version 5.1 to and from version 7 cell is not supported. And I touch a little bit on the port usage and and version 7 for WebSphere. Next slide, please. On this slide, we wanted to share with you some additional online documents to be used for reference to help you with the migration planning. So definitely take some time and visit those URLs. Next slide, please. So as you see, there is no such thing as a standard migration. Each one is unique, and there is no one-size-fits-all approach. Identifying your goals is key. Defining why you want to migrate, what you're trying to accomplish, outline your time frame, plan for the new environment to be better than the last one, and examine your budget. This is all part of your project planning. When planning, make sure you organize a migration team. That is so important. Have the team assist with creating a project plan, schedule regular meetings to discuss that plan, assess your overall configuration in each application, examine your migration options, review best practices, identify skill gaps within the team. Leverage incremental improvement strategies. You want to make sure you review known issues. Definitely take advantage of the case studies that we've demonstrated in this presentation. Look at the migration map using the URL. Look at the migration mapping. Definitely you want to review your URL for the port usage to avoid conflicts. And last but not least, make sure you include your ABP team and the IBM Westfield rep in your project planning. It is important you keep your IBM team engaged until implementation is completed. Remember, the more time you spend on the task of goals, assessment, and planning, the less time you spend in implementation. At this point, Stacy, can you please open the call for questions?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please unmute your phone and record your name when prompted. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please. There are no questions at this time.
Well, thank you, Stacy. Well, thank you for participating in today's ABP call series on Westfield Application Server 7, version 7.0 migration. As Chris mentioned earlier at the beginning of the call, we will have a part 2. Part 2 will focus on the technical aspects of migration, the migration process, and how to ensure your project plan works. If you have any suggestions on future topics, please contact your ABP rep. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your week.